Kevin.
And I'm Laurel.
And you're listening to episode 10 with our dad,
Pharmacy Joe.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. Today, I'd like to thank those that have left a 5-star rating and review on iTunes for the show. S. Chromie1 says, I've been a critical care pharmacist for several years and learned some new things on these podcasts. I like your style, Joe. Thank you so much. It means a lot to me to hear those reviews, and it also helps others find the show when you head over to iTunes and leave us a rating. This is episode 10, The Pharmacist and the ECG Should Be Friends. Today, there are a lot of ECG images that accompany this episode. You can find them and my favorite ECG learning resources on the show notes page at pharmacyjoe.com/episode10. As the expert in drug therapy, you need to know how different drugs exert their effects on the electrical system of the heart. Pharmacist review of the ECG is relatively straightforward compared to other professions. We should be able to identify the rhythm, look for signs of drug toxicity, and calculate a QTC. We don't need to worry about the different leads or which lead is looking at which side of the heart or any of the other complicated nuances that other providers need to know. In this episode, we'll review the ECG components. I'll give you my stepwise approach to identifying the rhythm, and I'll give examples for the following pharmacy-related ECG abnormalities: hyperkalemia, ST segment elevation MI, prolonged QTC interval, beta blocker toxicity, digoxin toxicity, tricyclic antidepressant toxicity, antiarrhythmic toxicity, torsades, ventricular fibrillation, ventricular tachycardia, atrial fibrillation, and heart block. Let's go into the review of the ECG components. The P wave represents atrial depolarization. That's followed by the QRS complex, which represents ventricular depolarization, which is followed by the T wave, which represents ventricular repolarization. Then there are intervals within these waves that it's important to look at. The PR interval represents the time for the impulse to travel from the SA node through the AV node to the ventricles. The QT interval represents the time for ventricular depolarization and repolarization to occur. This is called the QTC interval when corrected for heart rate. And finally, the R to R interval, that represents the time between beats and is used to calculate the heart rate. I have my own stepwise process to interpreting an ECG. You don't have to use my process. Feel free to develop your own. The most important thing is that you pick a process and follow it each time, and that's how you'll be able to readily and easily identify rhythms. So my first step is there a P wave before each QRS complex? This tells me that the rhythm originates in the SA node. Step two, is the R to R interval regular? Step three, is the rate normal? That's between 60 and 100 technically. Below 60 is a bradyarrhythmia. Above 100 is a tachyarrhythmia. Step four, is the PR interval normal? It should be less than 5 small boxes on the ECG. Anything longer is going to tip me off to some sort of heart block. Step five, is the QRS complex normal? It should be narrow, 2 to 3 small boxes on the ECG. And anything wider is going to make me nervous that there's something going on in the ventricles that's abnormal. Step six, is the QT less than half the R to R interval? If it's not, then the QTC is likely prolonged and you should calculate it out. Now, this is a really handy trick to use when you're in the hospital, you're evaluating a patient's drug interactions, there's a possible QTC interaction, and you want to know if their current QTC is prolonged or not. You can glance up at the monitor and use this rule of thumb. And if the QT is less than half the R to R interval, then that patient has a normal QTC. if it's, their QT is longer than half the R to R interval, then it's time to calculate that QTC by hand, possibly even by looking at a 12-lead EKG. And my last step, step 7, does each QRS complex look the same? And if not, then that is probably going to be indicating that there are premature ventricular or atrial contractions going on. Now we're going to jump in to those pharmacy-related conditions that I talked about earlier, and we're going to discuss how the ECG would look in those conditions. And remember, over in the show notes, I've got one or more ECG tracings that accompany each example for you to take a look at. So first is hyperkalemia. I like to be able to identify on the ECG whether or not there's life-threatening hyperkalemia present, because it helps guide treatment of whether you're going to give calcium or whether you're just going to give maybe some insulin dextrose or perhaps just some K-oxalate. So in hyperkalemia, I look for flat or missing P waves, peaked T waves. So the T waves are really high, about as high as the QRS complex, which is definitely abnormal. And I look for wide QRS intervals. The next example is ST segment elevation MI. Now for this, I look for a markedly elevated ST segment, kind of appears like a tombstone on the ECG. Diagnosis of acute MI is far more complicated, but I find it valuable to know this basic identification. The ST segment elevation indicates a complete blockage to a coronary artery. And the example I've got in the show notes is one of acute MI with a proximal LAD occlusion. Next is to be able to identify a prolonged QTC interval. The example in the show notes, I have a patient with a QTC interval of about 640 milliseconds. It's going to be really easy in this example for you to eyeball the QT interval compared to the R to R interval. And you'll be able to see that this QT is definitely more than half of the R to R. And again, that's just my visual shortcut to determine if I should look harder at how exactly prolonged the QTC is. Next, let's move on to the drug toxicities. For beta blocker toxicity, I look for severe bradycardia with QRS widening. Now, the example in the show notes is a patient with atenolol toxicity. Now, there's digoxin effect, which you can see on the ECG, and then digoxin toxicity, which really could be anything wrong on the ECG. So digoxin causes a funny scooped-looking ST depression, which you can see in the first image in the show notes. This does not indicate toxicity, just that the patient is taking digoxin. You could even use this knowledge in a medication reconciliation context with a patient that's not really able to tell you their meds. You're wondering if digoxin is part of them or if they're compliant. You can get the ECG and look for that scooped ST depression before you can get a dig level back. Digoxin toxicity, on the other hand, can cause any number of atrial and ventricular brady and tachy arrhythmias. So in the show notes page, I've got a link set up for you to go see a more comprehensive list. Really think anything that could go wrong in the heart, and digoxin toxicity can probably cause it. Next, tricyclic antidepressant toxicity. This is potentially life-threatening, and so this is very important, actually, for you to be able to identify on an ECG. You may be working in the emergency department. You may have a tricyclic screen called positive from the lab, and the first thing that everyone's going to do is race over to that patient's heart monitor to take a look, because you know, this is something that can really sneak up on you and be catastrophic for a patient. So what you want to look for is a wide QRS complex and a prolonged QTC interval. This is caused by sodium channel blockade and can quickly become life-threatening. The treatment for this will be to push sodium bicarb until the QRS narrows and then hang a bicarb drip. Now, where this knowledge really came in helpful for me once is I had a young woman come in with an overdose, and she had overdosed on what we thought was just Excedrin. So she had a narrow complex tachycardia and was just mildly hypertensive, probably from the caffeine. And so she was being evaluated and levels were being drawn for Tylenol and aspirin. And she also took therapeutically Seroquel. Now the lab called back with a positive TCA screen, and the physician got really worried that she had missed something. And so we're looking at the ECG together, and we say, well, this can't possibly be a toxicity because the QRS was narrow. And so we knew that the patient was okay. That gave me some time to look and determine, sure enough, Seroquel can cause a false positive on the TCA screen in the blood. Okay, now we'll move on to antiarrhythmic toxicity. For antiarrhythmic toxicity, I really focus on looking for abnormalities in ventricular conduction on the ECG, and that's a long QTC interval and a wide QRS. The example I've linked up in the show notes is one of sotalol toxicity, and here we have a prolonged QTC, and you can see about two-thirds of the way through a premature ventricular beat that's stuck in there. Now, torsades, which is, of course, what we constantly are concerned about as a pharmacist. According to one of my favorite ECG resource websites, ecgpedia.org, during torsades, the ventricles depolarize in a circular fashion, resulting in QRS complexes with a continuously turning heart axis around the baseline. And that's where the name torsades comes from. I've got an example in the show notes of a 12-lead ECG of a 56-year-old female experiencing torsades. And in this case, her potassium was 2.4 and magnesium 1.6. Another arrhythmia that you should be able to identify: ventricular tachycardia and ventricular fibrillation. These are two different arrhythmias, but I've included them together because they are both medical emergencies. For VTAC, look for only ventricular beats. That's pretty easy to see in the example in the show notes. And if the patient is conscious and has a pulse, if this persists, it can quickly develop into a pulseless rhythm. So this should be treated as an emergency. Then there's VFib. That's the second example in this section. And VFib is a chaotic depolarization of the ventricles, and that should be treated by immediate CPR and defibrillation. Now, if you encounter VFib in a conscious patient, check for problems with the ECG leads first. That's probably what's going on, because no patient with VFib should be conscious at that point. It's definitely a non-perfusing rhythm. Atrial fibrillation, this can be really handy to spot on the ECG or just the heart monitor at the bedside, because that can give you clues as to the patient's risks, medications they might be taking, etc. So look for absence of P waves and irregular R to R intervals. And it's that easy. You see that and everything else seems normal. The QRS is normal. Now you can spot AFib from across the room just by looking at the monitor. Now, heart block. There are many types of AV block. I encourage you to review them in the resources that I provide at the end of this post. I give two examples of complete or third degree heart block, which is considered a life-threatening condition. It's treated with electricity first, atropine only if you can't get the pacing set up in time. So the first example is just a third degree block. The second example is a short lasting heart block induced by adenosine. So that can be really interesting to see. What I look for here is absolutely no temporal relationship between the P waves and the R waves. So the atria and the ventricles are not in sync at all due to the complete block of electrical activity between them. I've got a bunch of ECG resources that I suggest you use to further develop your ability to interpret ECGs from a pharmacist's point of view. What I did when I decided I was going to learn more about ECGs is I did a bunch of self-study from these references, and then I went around and whenever I had a question, I found a cardiologist in my hospital and I asked them questions to help me make sense of it all. That's where I learned that nifty little trick for prolonged QTCs with the QT being greater than half the R-to-R interval, indicating a prolonged QTC. And I learned so much else just by finding a cardiologist and chatting with them about things. You'll find everybody loves to talk about what they know about. So if they're not busy or having a rotten day, they'll be more than happy to share their knowledge with you. And I hope that you choose to do the same for yourself. You can find the show notes for today's episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode10. I love hearing from you, Pharmacy Nation. How do you use the ECG in your daily practice? Let me know in the comments or by sending an email to joe@pharmacyjoe.com. And please take a moment to rate the show on iTunes. Doing so will help others find the show. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.